Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back, and today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the all-important Sunbury Motors guarantee. Terrific service department that backs it up from routine to difficult. They handle it all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Let's turn our attention now to the outstanding Mark Brennan, 247 Sports. My friend, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
It's great to be here, Steve. Thanks for having me. Day after signing day, so I get to take a deep breath and get back to work covering football.
Yeah. I mean, you were there for a long period of time watching all this happen. You've now watched this unfold over the years. What's your take on how it's done and the importance that is placed on it by the staff to the recruits as to how it's done?
Yeah, I mean, to me, Steve, the prevailing story yesterday, people want to talk about rankings. They want to talk about, stars. They want to talk about everything else. But you make a good point. You know, the stability at Penn State, the way that they've handled things since James Franklin has been here on the recruiting front, it's been unbelievable, the lack of drama on signing day. Yeah. And that's not necessarily good for our business, at Lines 247. The sites that tend to get the most traffic are the ones who are waiting for the last second commitment or a decommitment or something else. But, and then, Steve, to top it off this year, you lose both coordinators and you have to replace them after the season. And you don't have a single decommitment. And to me, that tells you what you need to know. So, yeah, we could talk about the rankings. We could talk about how Penn State has that cool war room set up. But all of that is, I don't want to say it's beside the point because it's not. The things they do on signing day are an important part of their whole process. But it's the work they do the years leading up to signing day now. I mean, Cooper Cousins is a guy who committed in 2020, I think. Yeah. So it's years and years and years of work. And people think, oh, it's signing day. Look, all this is happening. That's not when it's happening. It's happening for multiple years. It's happening at every one of those camps over the summer. It's happening at every visit. It's happening when the coaches go on the road. It's happening when the coaches get no sleep for 2 weeks after the season ends because they're on the road recruiting. So it's all of those things.
In fact, you may have seen some coaches or parts of the recruiting staff, if you're watching on Facebook Live or some of the pictures that Mark took during the course of this, of being on their cell phones. Well, they weren't talking to the current guys. Many of them were talking to the 25 and 26 guys saying this is going to be your day next year or the year after.
And the thing is, we see that every single year. So people may or may not know, but my daughter Grace is a student at Penn State, and she's an intern photographer for us. And I told her, you have to make sure you get photos of these guys on the phone because that's a, Steve, you recognize it. But I think a lot of people may look at those photos and think, yeah, these guys, they're talking to their wives, they're talking to their grandma or whatever. No, they are talking to recruits moving forward, and that's my point. This isn't something that is wrapped up in, a couple of months. I mean, this is years in the making. And, I'll dust off a blast from the past. Penn State was kind of on the forefront of this when, in the mid-90s, they got a commitment from Joe Nastasi, I think before his junior year.
Yes.
And, that people just were not doing it. But it was a kid who was thinking, this is where I want to go. And obviously it ended up being just a great thing for Joe. And he became a very productive player at Penn State. And he's been in state college all these years. He's a member of the state high coaching staff. But it goes back that far. Now, I would be lying if I didn't tell you that Franklin and company, James Franklin and company, have taken it to a different level. But only because you have to take it to a different level, because everybody is operating at that pace now, years in advance, not days, not months, years in advance.
Right. And exactly. And that's how it has to be done, which now brings me to this. You are an avid college basketball fan and an avid college basketball watcher. College basketball has had an early signing period now for 2.5 decades. Which is usually the, second Wednesday of November. And it goes off flawlessly every year, and there's never any problem. Which means then the coaches can concentrate on other recruiting, or more particularly on their team in the season. Does college football need to rethink what they're doing with the signing day and maybe have it, let's pick a date, the first week of August?
Yeah, and here I wouldn't say the first. I don't know if it would be the first week of August. I think what they have to do is make life more tenable for these coaches. And I know people are going to say, these guys are making millions of dollars. But, it used to be that you finish the season and these coaches who are human beings who come up for air for a week. And now with the early signing day when it is, so for people who don't know, I mean, the signing day used to be in February. And then the coaches wanted an early signing day, so they moved the early signing day to December 20th, or right in the area third, that we're in right now.
Third Wednesday of December is what it is.
Yeah, I knew you could put it better than I could put it. But the problem is that okay? So that happens, and then you make it so much easier for kids to transfer, and then you limit the transfer portal window until that early December to early January. And now you're cramming the early recruiting period. You're cramming the transfer portal, where these coaches, they have to go out and recruit other transfers, but they also have to recruit their own players.
Right.
They have to make sure their players are comfortable. And I mean, we know it's a fact of life now in college football. There's going to be coaching turnover almost every year, as we saw with Penn State. It's not always going to be this drastic, but hey, listen, I think Penn State is the perfect example where if you're very good as a coordinator, you're not going to be around very long. Or if you're struggling as a coordinator, you're not going to be around very long. It's unfortunate, right? It's the way it is. It's like, so we saw both ends of it. And so my point being, Steve, is that you are cramming so much into such a small window. And the issue for these coaches is that they need people to protect them from themselves, especially a guy like James Franklin. And I say that in a complimentary way, because if he's put in a position where he has to outwork somebody, he is going to outwork them.
Yep.
At whatever cost, like we saw at the bowl announcement where, he admitted he didn't look very good because he had been, just grinding and grinding away. And please take that the right way, everybody. I am not saying that as a criticism. I'm saying that when you're in that position, if you are not taking every minute that you can to outwork your opponent, you're not doing your job. And he's going to do that. And you know the staff well enough, Steve, right? These guys are all wired the exact same way. And it's almost as if they need somebody to protect them from themselves. You can be critical. I remember when James Franklin was hired, he said something, and this resonates with me to this day. He joked, there are better looking coaches than me. There are better coaches than me, but no coach is going to outwork me.
Right, right.
And that's where this all comes into play, is that these guys, to be successful, you have to work. James Franklin gets in there at, what, 6-something a.m., and he's leaving at 10 at night.
Yep.
And his assistants are the same way. They have a daily meeting at 7 a.m. Mm-hmm. And it's so going back to where we started, I know I'm all over the place here, but, yeah, you need an early signing period. Would August work? Yeah, I think August would work because you're getting ready for the preseason and things aren't being pulled all over the place. But at some point, I think it would be much better because, let's face it, the kids we saw with Penn State this year. These kids, I mean, I think they had one guy, Jalen Harvey, who committed in October.
Yep.
And other and everybody knew for a year and a half that he was going to commit to Penn State. Yeah, I think he just wanted to enjoy the process. So many of these kids just want to get the process over. Just do it in August. I agree. And I know I went a long way there, but I think there's more to it than just moving the date. It's like, you know, these coaches, I think, need to be able to take a deep breath every once in a while.
And that was the point of the question, which you then artfully ran with. Tom Allen had a chance to meet with the media for the first time as the Penn State defensive coordinator. Your impressions?
Well, he had a tough act to follow in Andy Kotelnicki, right? I mean, nobody's going to come out. But no, I mean, I think we all had a better feel for who Tom Allen is and what he's about than Andy Kotelnicki, just because Andy, he was a little bit more under the radar. He wasn't a head coach. He wasn't at high profile programs. He wasn't in the Big Ten. So I think we know what Tom Allen's all about. And yeah, definitely, nothing but impressed by him. And I would hope that people, as they look at the situation, and I think a lot of people are looking at Indiana's defensive stats the last couple years and seeing where they ranked in the Big Ten, there are a couple things to take into account. Number one, when you're the head coach, that is not necessarily a reflection on you. I mean, it ultimately, everything in the program is a reflection on you, but he wasn't the one calling the defensive plays.
Right.
Number two, and I think this has gone way overlooked, Steve. Take a look at what the transfer portal has done to Indiana football.
Yeah.
And it's not just Michael Penix, right, who was a Heisman finalist. I mean, you go, and I don't have the numbers right here in front of me, but, you know, you see Penn State, and typically Penn State's been losing some kids who are kind of, you know, maybe they would play next year, maybe they wouldn't. You know, maybe they're going to a place where they have a better opportunity and it's a win-win for everybody. Penn State's not losing Heisman winners, you know, or Heisman contenders, you know what I mean? And so Indiana was in a position where it's losing 20-plus players every single year.
Yes.
Yes.
And if you think that's not going to impact where you are, I mean, do you think it's a coincidence that Indiana went from being competitive and as soon as the transfer portal really heats up, falls off the edge of the cliff?
Right, right.
And I think Penix is just a great example. We saw him. I mean, we could argue about whether that was a touchdown or not against Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is, in that game, he single-handedly kept Indiana in that game.
Yes, he did.
It was just fantastic. So whatever you think about the end of the game, that's fine. But you can't deny the level of player that he is. And when you're losing that level of player on offense, they were losing players not quite that good, but they were losing many of their best defensive players as well. So you have to take all of that with a grain of salt. So bottom line is, you know, I think we all have a pretty good feel for how well James Franklin vets this stuff. And I think we all know that if he feels he makes a mistake, he'll make a change quickly. But I think Tom Allen's track record before these last couple of years is too good to just discount him based on a couple of seasons.
Especially when he worked exclusively on that side of the ball before he became the head coach, Indiana had phenomenal defensive stats and they were tough. Micah McFadden of the Giants will tell you how good this guy is. Next up, Pat Kraft has had a couple of opportunities. What have you learned, if anything, new about that?
You know, I just think James Franklin talks a lot about alignment.
Yes.
And you can just see where they're at. You can see where, and I don't want it to come across the wrong way, but I think realistically speaking, if you want to have a successful athletic department at a place like Penn State, you have to dedicate the proper resources to football. It's just the case. That does not mean you don't dedicate the proper resources to all the other sports. But we know what makes the money, right? We know what's going to generate the revenue. So I think when you have an AD who's willing to pay an Andy Kotelnicki, you know, what it'll cost. Tom Allen's probably a different story because I think he's probably okay financially anyway. I have no idea what he's going to be making, but I know that he walked away from the Indiana situation in a good spot. But you look at what they're doing with facilities. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at the way they're trying to generate more revenue from the football stadium, which, you know, I don't think Penn State has done a good enough job over the years. You have to have that alignment with your football program and with your leadership if you want everybody to be as successful as possible. I mean, let's face it. It would be great if Penn State had a perennial top 10 basketball team, but it just hasn't. Now, Penn State basketball makes its share of money, but not at the level that football does. So you have this thing that generates all this money, and you have to dedicate the proper resources to it to be able to compete with everybody else. Now, I think the other side of that, Steve, is James Franklin has been saying this for years. If you've listened closely, I know you have, but I mean, you know, fans out there and observers, if you've listened closely, James has been talking for years about this alignment with, you know, the football coaching staff being on the same page with the athletic department, being on the same page with university leadership. And now he's getting it. So what does that mean? Now the ball is in his court. He's getting what he needs, what he said he's needed to compete at the highest level. Now you have to be able to beat the Ohio States and Michigan, even though you're not playing Michigan for a while. But you get my point. I mean, you have the tools that you've been asking for. Now it's the ball is in James's court. He doesn't have every single tool, but he's getting the stuff that he needs. Now it's going to be a little bit different with the playoff coming in next year. And you're not going to have to be in the top four to be able to compete for a national title. But we'll see it. I mean, the Big Ten, even if they're not playing Michigan and Ohio State every single year, they're going to be playing good enough teams every single year with the addition of the Pac-12 teams that we're going to know if James is up to the challenge. And I'm anxious to see that because he's been asking for all these things for years. Now he's getting them. Now he has the alignment that he wants. Let's see how he reacts to it.
Exactly. Very quickly, quick synopsis, the matchup with Ole Miss at the Peach Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody's kind of billing it as this, you know, great offense against this great defense. And I'm not sure that I necessarily quite, you know, see it that way. I mean, I look at Ole Miss and what they did offensively against the two best teams on its schedule, Alabama and Georgia, scoring a total of 27 points. And a team that's took a hit losing its best offensive lineman. So I don't know. You know, my sense is that this is going to be a low scoring game, Steve. I know that's kind of antithetical to what we've seen from Penn State in bowl games where, you know, recently where a lot of them become shootouts. But I just think the strength of this Penn State team is defense. I think even with the coordinator change, I like their defensive coaching staff, and I think they're going to be able to do what they need to do. And then offensively, I think they're going to be in a position where, you know, Ty Howell and Jawan Sider are going to be comfortable enough running the ball that this isn't going to be a high-scoring game. So I'm thinking I'll give you my pick because I've already done it for our TV show. It's Penn State 24, Ole Miss 17. Again, I like Ole Miss. I like Jackson Dart, the quarterback. The running back's really good. They have good weapons at receiver. But I keep going back to that offensive line. And even without Chop, I really like what I saw from the Penn State defensive line, and I love what Penn State's linebackers are able to do rushing the passer. So I think it's going to be I don't think it's going to be a great day for that Ole Miss offense. We'll see if I'm wrong.
Yeah, the one tackle is definitely out. The other tackle is still iffy. Hey, Mark, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Grace did another great job. And appreciate everything. Happy holidays to Stacy, Grace, you. Appreciate you very much.
Yeah, to your family as well, Steve. Thank you.
Mark Brennan, 247 Sports. Today's show brought to you by our great friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory with great warranties, fabulous pre-owned inventory with the all-important Sunbury Motors Guarantee, terrific service department. They need more technicians as well. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back to today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. Terrific service department that backs it up every step of the way. Routine, you always need routine maintenance. It's dependable. And sometimes you run into something difficult. They handle it all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. For more than 40 seasons, he has been the soundtrack of Ole Miss football, basketball, and baseball. And his outstanding work continues. In Mississippi, he is considered to be a legendary voice. And with that, we bring in the play-by-play voice of Ole Miss football, basketball, and baseball, David Kellum. David, a privilege. Great to have you with us.
Steve, thank you very much. I love the legendary. That just means you've been doing this a long time, I guess.
It also is a level of respect, my friend, a level of respect.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you much.
Let's start with this. I know recruiting plays into why guys get contract extensions, but Lane Kiffin did just sign a contract extension with Ole Miss. What kind of energy and juice has he pumped into the program as a head coach?
Well, a lot. I mean, he really has. He's done a phenomenal job. Kind of survived some staff changes last year, brought in a new staff and in several spots, and has really hired well. They've recruited well. He's got a tremendous offensive mind and really, really does get it. And he's really engaged the fan base. And so, there's a good relationship right now for sure, but that's usually based on success, and he's been very successful since he's arrived at Ole Miss.
No question. And part of that has been the use of the transfer portal. I've got 21 of your top 25 guys on defense being transfers, and obviously the top three quarterbacks are. What has that meant to at least steady the program so then he can then recruit the 3 to 5 year players?
Yeah, I think the main thing was that he embraced that immediately. I know you heard coaches when the portal thing first came out would say, I don't know if we're going to do that, and Lane embraced that immediately. He had a little bit of a pro background, obviously, and so he determined that, that's the rules. That's the way they want us to play the game. We're going to play it to the best of our ability, and so he's done a super job in the portal world and gotten, like you said, I mean, you go across the board, there are a lot of key players on this football team that came in via the portal, and several of them that will be with us in the future too. But I think that embracing it early, having a plan of attack, our collective that we put together has been very, very aggressive, done a nice job. We're not the biggest fan base in the world, but we have responded as far as the NIL piece goes, and so I think that he's really got everybody pulling in the right direction.
Yeah, but you have a passionate fan base. I love the passion of the Ole Miss fan base. Yeah. Whenever I've been around them, tremendous. I've got to ask you, before I get to Jackson Dart, outside of Jackson Dart, when Jack Ham and I looked at the tape, the first thing that struck both of us, was the play of your tight end, Caden Priestcorn, and what he means to all elements of your offense. Are we spot on there, or are we missing something?
No, you're 100% right. In fact, he was hurt coming out of camp. Actually had a good camp, got hurt right before we started the season. We were missing him in a big way early. And when he was inserted into the lineup on a regular basis, he's just been fantastic. He's a good blocker, got great hands. I mean, he's a pro type tight end, and he has made a huge difference for us and brings good leadership to the table too. And he's a portal kid from Memphis. He played at University of Memphis, did a wonderful job there before coming to us. But yeah, he does kind of jump out on the tape because he just does so many positives for us. And the cool thing about him is he's an older player. He's married, got a little one, you know, so he's very mature on top of everything else. So he brings a really nice leadership piece to the team.
No question. Now let's get to Jackson Dart. We'll finally get to him. Transfer out of USC. He's been now at Ole Miss a couple of years. What have you seen and liked in his development with Lane Kiffin?
The main thing is, you know, he's had three straight years where he's had to compete for his job, which is kind of wild because he's a phenomenal quarterback. He had to do that at USC, also the first 2 years here, and he came out of camp having won the job. You know, we got Sanders from Oklahoma State that came in here too, and it was a heck of a competition before we started the season, but he won it, got in there. And I think the main thing that he's done, Lane has got him really better in the turnover world, reduced his interceptions dramatically. He can run on you. He's one of those guys that you look at him, you say, well, he's not going to run. Well, he runs a lot. I mean, he really does. That's part of the offense, too. I think he's gotten to the point where he throws the deep ball better as well. But he's really solid quarterback and make all the throws and now really gets the offense.
Also can move. I mean, that's the other element, too. You watch when he can run with the football. I mean, it's not you're not going to sit there and he's not going to run the ball 10, 12 times in a game. But what does his movement mean to keep drives alive?
I think it's huge. And, a lot of times, and nothing against the quarterback world, running backs can cut and see things a little bit better sometimes because that's their job.
Yeah.
But he runs like a running back. I mean, he really does. He sees the field really well. The thing that drives us crazy sometimes is he won't slide enough. He's one of those lower shoulder and run over you type guys. So he is really, when he does run, he runs with a running back mentality. But it makes the defense really have to be honest with him. And then there's a lot of times he'll pull up close to the line and dump the ball off as part of this offense. But yeah, he's definitely a weapon in the running game.
Yeah, but that's good. Jack and I say that all the time about Drew Aller. Like, slide. it's okay.
Right.
And Drew was telling me, he said, well, I kind of do it like a sideways. That way, he says, that way they mark it where you go down. I'm like, okay, all right. Okay.
Yeah, I saw Drew. In fact, one of your games, I've been watching several games, and I saw him do exactly that. He kind of ran up. He said, I think I'm going to slide. I don't know if I want to slide. And then he slid sort of sideways. But hey, he's pretty smart. That really puts the ref in a tough bind. Was he sliding or not?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. Hey, one element that was a problem for you in the Mississippi State game and the Egg Bowl game was that they had some guys banged up in the offensive line.
Right.
How important has that offensive line been, and how are they right now?
We had to move some people around for sure. They did a really nice job in that game. I think that
you
got to the point where it looked like our defense was going to hold them, and so we really turned that into a running game on our offense, which kept the score down a good bit. But Jaden Williams is the one that we were missing primarily. Hopefully he'll be back. I know he's been in practice some, and we'll see if he can come back and be effective, and we can move the pieces back to where they belong. Micah Pettis, who got hurt the right tackle, is still going to be out. I mean, he's had surgery, and so we could still be down a couple of tackles in the game, which is definitely no fun, but we've got pretty good depth there, and we'll see if Jaden can play.
All right, so now let's get to you mentioned the running game. Well, I'll tell you, Judkins is really good, and the backup kid is really good. I mean, what have they meant to, because everyone thinks that Lane is pass all the time. He loves the running game. So what have these guys meant?
Yeah, that's a good point, Steve, because people think of Lane as, pass happy, air raid-ish type offense, and that's not the case at all.
Right,
if he can run on you, he will run on you. And pretty much takes it game from game, but he's always had in his offense really good running backs. And so Judkins is fantastic. He's one of those kids that just a rare talent. And Bentley's got breakaway speed, and the two of them complement each other really, really well. But Lane likes to run, and doesn't mean he won't throw it 100 times too. But he really does a good job of trying to stay as balanced as possible. We've been in the top three in the SEC in rushing since he's been here.
Yeah, and the three wideouts are separated, what, by five catches between the three of them? Like 47 to 52 or 53 or some number like that. What does each bring to the table that makes them inviting targets for Jackson?
Well, we're one of two teams in the country that's got three receivers with 700 yards or more each.
Yeah.
And Trey Harris is kind of the taller kid, came in from Louisiana Tech. Really good hands for all of them, primarily run really nice routes. But Trey was a really good get for us, if you will. He's a great example of being best player on a team that maybe is not in some of our bigger leagues like we play in, mm-hmm. that wanted to try a better opportunity. So he came to Ole Miss, and he's flourished really, really nicely. And then Dayton Wade, smaller receiver, got great hands. He made some acrobatic catches. And then Walton, too, has been fantastic as well, Western Kentucky and Louisville transfers. And so all three of those are portal guys that have been really effective. I think the main thing is great hands. They run really good routes, and they have flourished in Lane's offense.
3-3-5 on defense, David, which brings with it multiple looks. But, you know, what have they liked about the defense, and also the fact that they like going with a 3-3-5?
Well, and Pete has adjusted that occasionally in different games. I think that's the base where he likes to start.
But yeah.
He has run a lot of five front two, different things depending on who the opponent is. But you're right, that's pretty much his base. I think the main thing is the depth in the defensive front. We have had years where we've really struggled with depth and trying to get through the season and keeping everybody healthy on that defensive front. But we're running 8 or 9 in that front, and we're staying fresh at the end. And pretty much every kid that plays there, talked to J.J. Pegues about it here just recently, that they're fresh at the end of the game because there's a really good rotation there, and it's a quality rotation. So I think that's the main thing, as far as the defense goes. Really talented defensive backfield. Linebackers are solid as well. So we've got some depth issues here and there, and I know they're trying to fix that in the recruiting piece. Pete wants us to get better, obviously, on the defensive side, but I think the rotation on the defensive front is what's helped us this year for sure.
Yeah, I've got a lot of defensive linemen on my chart because I see the rotation on tape. Secondary-wise, I really like Saunders and Washington. What's your thought on each one of those two guys?
They're interchangeable, can play safety or corner. And of course, they kind of settled into their spots this time of year. But coming out of camp, there was, a lot of question mark about who's going to be corner, who's going to be safety. D'Andre Prince is an outstanding corner as well. JUCO transfer that's done a real good job. But run the ball well. They're bigger. We've kind of had some small corners and safeties in the past, and they're taller and all. And they've done a pretty good job. And how it is, Steve. It's all about that defensive front. If they get a little pressure, get some heat, and you look at your guys' numbers with all the sacks and all, it makes such a huge difference when you're putting all that pressure on a quarterback, and we've been able to do that a little bit too.
Yeah, we mentioned earlier your great fan base, and they really are. I love the passion of the Ole Miss fan base. You can tell how much they mean in the state. What does this particular game, the fact it's a New Year's Six game, now it's not the first New Year's Six game that Lane's coached them to, but what does this game mean to that fan base?
Well, I think two things. One, to play Penn State in general. I mean, it's a big name school. You think about the history of what Penn State's been able to do through the years. I mean, that's incredible as well. And so I think our fans are excited to be able to play Penn State just in general. And the flip side is we've never won 11 games in this program in any year. And so trying to get to 11th win. And you're right, our fan base really pushes our players. And so I'm sure they're reading in here and all that stuff. But the opportunity to play a Penn State in a bowl. I mean, you know, next year this could be a playoff game where we're trying to advance, you know.
Right.
So it's kind of unique, I think, in those two categories.
Yeah, if the 12-team playoff were this year, both schools would have made the 12-team playoff. Now, you'd be getting ready for a rematch with Georgia, and Penn State would be getting ready for a rematch with Ohio State, but that's a different story,
day. That's the thing that's so similar about the two programs, too. So we lost to Georgia and Bama, you know, on the road. Penn State lost to their top two in the league, but I bet you that both would like another shot if it's some of those teams. So maybe next year when we get in the playoffs, we'll have that solved.
Yeah, exactly. I do have to ask you about those two games. You played both of them tough, right? What in the end was the difference in each one of those games in your view, David?
I think with Alabama playing on the road, Bill Rowe had his best game to that point. The quarterback played really well. It was a tight game, low-scoring game, and we did hang in there deeper in that game. But we were banged up, had some injuries here and there. But playing in Tuscaloosa is very, very difficult, and just couldn't get it done. The Georgia game was tight early, and then they just really turned it on and played so well the rest of the game. I talked to some of Georgia's people I've been friends with for years, and almost to a person, they told me that this was the best game Georgia had played. And one person I have a lot of respect for told me that this is Georgia's team really cared about this game. I said, well, don't care about it. Leave us alone. You know, but they really did play their best game of the year. And I know that's coach speak and sounds that way, but they were so impressive. And we just couldn't keep up with them at Athens. But playing on the road, two very difficult places. And we let the Georgia game get away, but we hung in there pretty good with Alabama.
I have to ask you, what do you think about the expansion with Texas and Oklahoma coming in beginning next season?
Why are we doing that? That's my question. this league is already crazy.
I mean, the Big Ten has USC, UCLA, Washington, and Oregon. Like I said to somebody, said everybody's job just got tougher.
I know, but it's crazy. It's going to make for some fun competition. Fan bases are going to love it. I think that, you know, we have played Texas and Oklahoma a little bit because we kind of lean toward that side of the conference, if you will, in non-conference matchups in football and also in baseball and basketball a little bit too. So it's not totally new to our particular program, but I mean, you know, they're two great programs, tons of success in multiple sports, and their fan bases are very, very passionate as well. Texas, we played them a non-conference home and away. They came to the Grove and basically took it over. There were so many Texas people here, it was unbelievable. And then that was our first time to come, and then we went there the next year. They beat us badly here. We beat them badly there. So we have that in our background, not too many years ago. But I think it's going to be fun and interesting to see how it goes. We're going to play 8 games this upcoming year, but probably go to 9 before it's over with. And it'll give the conference even more, you know, I would think, recognition nationally as well.
Last question, and this will actually be about Ole Miss basketball, because the last time I did a Penn State Ole Miss game was at the Barclays Center, and Kermit Davis was the head coach at the time, and Ole Miss had a tremendous comeback. You won the game. Chris Beard's now the head coach. Off to a great start, best start in 16 years. What kind of difference has he made in the program at Oxford?
I think a lot of focus, you know, and that's coach speak too, but he's done a really nice job of making the kids that are the returning kids especially realize, hey, you can be successful. We can win here. We're going to win here. He's engaged the fan base. And we've been fortunate in some games now. You go back and look, we've won some tight ones. You look across the country, a lot of the differences in the records are those that, you know, didn't get it done in the last 2 or 3 possessions. But Ole Miss has been pretty consistent at the end. But we've got Matt Morrell, who's a fantastic player, also Duke transfer, and Jamin Brakefield has been here a couple of years, and so you kind of work around those two, and then Chris went out and did some good stuff in the portal as well, and he's just a great coach. He's all about ball, very focused coach, but I think out of the gate, he's really convinced the fans to get behind the program, and usually have to prove yourself before they'll do that, but he's got them engaged early, and now he is also winning, so we've got some pretty excited fans about basketball right now.
5-0 in games decided by 3 points or less, just in case anybody's wondering.
Right.
David, absolute pleasure. As always, and I know when I've seen you, I've said this to you personally, but congratulations on what is continues to be a great career and what you mean to Ole Miss football, basketball, baseball as well, and what you mean to the fan base there. I know down there you are universally beloved, and we appreciate the time you gave us today, and I'm really looking forward to seeing you again down in Atlanta.
Steve, thanks so much. And back to you. Appreciate your work and all, and looking forward to seeing you in the Peach Bowl. And I'm sure there'll be tons of Penn State and Ole Miss people ready to get after each other. Should be fun.
Sounds great. Have a great holiday and look forward to seeing you.
Same to you. Merry Christmas.
David Kellum, the legendary play-by-play voice of Ole Miss football, basketball, and baseball. Great to have him on the show today. Well, here in Atlanta, and today was the day where Penn State went through its last real full practice. You know, it's a walkthrough tomorrow. And then coming up is Fast Friday, and the game's on Saturday at noon. Jack Ham, Brian Tripp, Roger Corey, Bob Taylor, and I will be on hand at Mercedes-Benz Dome Stadium for the Peach Bowl. We'll hear it right here on WKOK, starting at 10:30 with a noon kickoff. Today's show has been brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.